Hey, we're kicking off a new series today called This Is Us. And so I want to kind of walk you through how we got to where we are, what we've been doing, where we go. Back in February or March, we began a vision discovery process. And through that process, we gathered around tables and we asked ourselves a question: what could City Light look like 5 years from now if we let Jesus have his way? And we got all kinds of different ideas. And we asked people to pray before they came and just kind of seek out what the Lord was saying. And there were some common themes, and we pulled all of that together. We did it 3 times. Over half the congregation was involved in those meetings. And then we went from those meetings to, we summarized 3 stories that we wrote about City Light into 1 big story. And then we shared that with another group of people, representatives from each of those groups. And we said, hey, we want you to help us identify the things that are really, really important to us. We call those our values. And so these are the things over the next few weeks we're going to talk about. These are the things that define who we are, what we're about. Some are obvious. You'll look around, you'll hear them, and you'll go, yeah, that's obvious. This is what we do. Other things are, as politicians say, aspirational. They're things that we want to aspire to. They're things we want to grow into. There are things we want to mature and become. And so that's where we're going. And so we're kicking off this morning, This Is Us. In 2 Samuel chapter 6, there is a very interesting account, biblical account, of a moment in time. So the backstory is that the Ark of the Covenant, which represented God's presence with his people, built in the wilderness, traveled with them through the wilderness into the promised land, and it was there for all of that time. It's where they offered, where the high priest would offer sacrifice before the Lord on behalf of the people, all of those things. And it said the presence of God, the glory of God dwelled between the wings of the cherubim. There's 2 angels on top of the Ark, and the presence of God dwelled between those 2 wings. And through a series of terrible decisions, the Ark of God fell into the hands of the enemy. And there in the hands of, and it was gone from Israel for a long time. And then it came back. And David heard about it. He was king at that point. He heard about it. And he begins to bring the Ark back. But there was a process. There was a right way to bring the Ark back. But David thought, well, it's new times and it's better times. It's happier times. So I'm going to do it differently. And instead of carrying the Ark on the shoulders of the priests, he put it on a cart. And they moved it on a cart. And everything was generally going okay until an ox stumbled, the wagon wobbled, and a guy named Uzzah put up his hand, touched the Ark, and got zapped. Uzzah was done. Crispy critters for Uzzah. Harsh. The parade comes to a full stop. Everybody's looking at everybody else. I think this is really interesting. They look around and they see a house over on the hill owned by a guy named, you ready for this? Obed Edom. What's the name of the street we're on again? Obed. We're on Obed. If you can't remember, it's the street. Obed Edom. So they look around, they see Obed Edom's house, and they carry the Ark to Obed Edom's house. They knock on the door and go, hey, we got a problem. One of our people just got killed. Can we leave this here? Can we leave this here? And Obed-Edom agrees to leave it, that they can leave it there. And so this is what happens. They leave. The Ark of God is in Obed-Edom's house for 3 months. And the Bible says the Lord blessed him and his entire household. The Lord blessed him and his entire household. King David was told, the Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and everything he has because of the Ark of God. Let that sink deep into your heart and mind this morning. Everything is blessed because the presence of God was in his house. In his house. The presence of God brought the blessing of God. The presence of God brought the blessing of God. What does that mean? Well, it means this, that Obed-Edom's relationships, Obed-Edom's children, Obed-Edom's health, Obed-Edom's crops, his herds, his finances, everything that was connected to Obed-Edom was blessed because of the presence of God that was established in his house. God's presence. We're blessed. Everything was blessed because the presence of God was in his home. Now see this. God's presence brings God's goodness. Still tracking along here, right? God's presence brings God's blessing. God's presence brings God's goodness. Now, Romans chapter 8 and 9 and 10, Paul is writing it. And chapter 8 is, you really kind of, as you read Romans chapter 8, you really have to be paying attention. It's not a good time to daydream as you're reading Romans chapter 8. It's not a good time to be doing something else because you really have to pay attention. But Paul writes and he strings together these two important thoughts. He says, Christ lives in us through his Spirit who works in and through us, or in and through our lives. Romans chapter 8, verse 9 and 10. Those two thoughts, Christ's Spirit in us and Christ in us at work. So that means this, that we are carriers of God's presence. We are carriers of God's presence. I took the container ship image on purpose because they're big and everything that you could ever imagine is on a container ship. Like, everything comes on container ships. Christ lives in us through his Spirit who works in and through our lives. We are carriers of his presence. So follow me. When the people of God are aligned with the plans and the purposes of God, then he changes the world through us. There's this alignment thing that has to happen. Because if I'm not living in alignment with God's plans and with God's purposes, I miss the boat, if you will, of what he's intended. If I choose to live outside of his plans and his purposes, what could have been doesn't happen. If I choose to live in rebellion to his plans and purposes, certainly what could have been doesn't happen. But when my heart, when my mind, when my life, when my values, when my priorities, when my energies, when my efforts, when my resources are all aligned with the plans and purposes of God, then he changes the world through us. Someone should say amen, because that's really good. So think about this. Here we are, given this opportunity, right? We carry God's presence. Christ lives in us. His Spirit works through us. And so wherever we go, we carry his presence. And as he works through us, he changes the world through us, which makes us, are you ready for this? Spiritual environmentalists. We don't have to drive Priuses. I'm just kidding if you drive a Prius. Right? We are spiritual environmentalists. We create a climate wherever we go. Like, I absolutely believe in climate change. We create a climate wherever we go. We create a climate of God's goodness, create a climate of God's presence. We create a climate where God's blessing can come and flow. Spiritual environmentalists change the environment around us because of who lives in us and who works through us. Say, it's not about me. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's not about me. But you and me are important in the plan. You and me are important in the plan. We change the environment because of who lives in us and who works through us. So environmental change is possible. Now, you know that in my real job, in my full-time job that consumes the bulk of my passion and energy, that I work in government. I work with political leaders all across the country. Our team works with political leaders all across the country, like Jason and Anna here in Victoria, and Charlie in Toronto, and Fred in Regina, and Michelle in Quebec City, and Grant and Anne Claire and Joel in Ottawa and starting next month, Phil out in Prince Edward Island, and I've missed some people along the way. But we're all working with politicians in this environment, and the assumption is, oh, it's dark and it's evil and it's hostile. And it's, you know what? It's all of those things. But greater is he that's in us than he that's in the world. So the climate changes. The climate changes. And the same way the climate changes in provincial legislatures and on Parliament Hill, the climate changes here in Gorge Tillicum. Because we're here. The climate changes on your street because you're there. The climate changes where you live, in your relationships, in your home, because you're there. You're there. So let's walk through four foundations for spiritual environmentalists today. The first one is this: hope over fear. So this spring, Barb and our girls and I went to New York City. It's true. It's the city that never sleeps. It's the city where you put in 20,000 steps a day. And you just got to go for more because there's just more to see. One of the places that we went while we were there was the 9/11 Memorial. And that was very moving and very impactful. But just down the street from the 9/11 Memorial, you'll see this sculpture. I actually took this picture. I looked for a better one online, and there were some, but I would have to pay for them, so I used the one that I took. If you look carefully, there's a guy drinking a coffee on the beside the P, but he gets to be in my sermon today. Hope over fear. It's an amazing place, actually, to put a sculpture of hope down the street from the 9/11 Memorial. We are a people of hope. We change the climate because we bring hope. Now, if you pay attention to the news, if you listen to the news, or you know that kind of a thing, here's what happens. The world screams fearful messages. Excuse me. The world screams fearful messages. Everybody's afraid. Climate change. The world is going to end. Everybody's afraid. The Middle East is going to erupt. It could be a global conflict. Everyone's afraid. Look what's the terrible things that are happening in Ukraine right now. And the list goes on and on. Here are all of the terrible things that are about to happen. It's enough to make you very, very, very fearful if you don't have hope. The economy, the interest rates, fear is near, fear is here. That's the refrain of the world that we live in. But the world needs a hopeful message. A hopeful message. Not kumbaya, not kind of just naive idealism, but it needs a message of hope that endures through all of time. A message of hope that endures through all of time. It needs a message that inspires people because it gives them an inner hope and an inner peace and an inner courage and an inner strength that sustains them and moves them forward. Hope has a name. His name is Jesus. And hope is contagious. Hope is contagious. So pillar number one, as we become spiritual environmentalists, embrace becoming spiritual environmentalists, is we are a people of hope. We're a people of hope. Number two, we choose love over performance. Love over performance. I heard this great story this morning before church. Small little church, maybe kind of like ours. This woman, young woman comes in and she's dressed like to go to a nightclub. Kind of not really appropriate for church, but she's dressed to kind of go like to go to a nightclub. And people are uncomfortable with what she's wearing that morning. But they're not as kind as we would be. But they're uncomfortable. And so as people are leaving, because they're all dressed very modestly and very properly and, you know, kind of very stuffy, as they're leaving, she's, you know, Pastor Stanley's literally shaking everybody's hand, and as she comes through the line, he leans forward and says, you know, thank you for being here today. Perhaps when you come again, you could ask the Lord about what you should wear to church. Nasty, uncomfortable. So the next week, she comes back. And she's wearing the same thing she wore the week before. And she's kind of happy, and she's just kind of in her place and in the groove, and she's really enjoying it. But the people are uptight, and the pastor is like I kind of gave her a heads up last week that maybe not appropriate to wear a clubbing dress to church. But you know, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So church ends. He goes to the back. Everybody goes through. Say, nice sermon, pastor. Nice sermon, pastor. Nice sermon, pastor. The young lady comes to him, and he leans forward, and he says, I thought I told you to ask the Lord what you should wear to church on Sunday. And she said, well, I did ask the Lord. And he said, well, what did he say? He said, I don't know what they wear to church. I've never been there either. So here's the thing, right? We put expectations on people. We'll love you. We'll accept you if you look like us, if you dress like us, if you smell like us, if you act like us. Right? We love people. We're willing to love people based on their performance. That's kind of our starting place. If you do the right thing, if you wear the right clothes, right? We love people. It's not what we do, though. We love people for who they are and where they are. You don't have to jump through our hoops to have us love you. We'll reach out with open hands and open hearts. We'll meet you where you are and love you for who you are, because we're people who love. So hope, love. We love unconditionally. We love unreservedly. Number three, healing over hatred. Healing over hatred. So I'm going to make a big statement that doesn't directly apply to City Light, but it does apply to City Light. Because of what I do, I know this to be true. The church has an image problem. The church, in the broadest of senses, has an image problem. People don't like us. And we could be self-righteous about it and say, well, people don't like us because we stand for the gospel. People don't like us because we stand for righteousness. People don't like us because Jesus said everybody will hate us. We miss the part where he says they'll hate us because of him. We have an image problem. The image problem, the image is this, is that we're angry, we're intolerant, we're bigoted, we're hateful. Ouch. Now, I know that none of that's true because I know you. And I know me. I know that I'm not bigoted. I know I'm not angry. I know I'm not hateful. And nor do you. Nor are you. But the difference between what people think and who we are is massive. So we have work to do, if you will, to rehabilitate our image. That means we have to dial back the rhetoric on Facebook, and we need to begin to build bridges. We begin to make connections. Because you can't be a house of healing if people think you're full of hate. Somehow we have to figure out how we're going to communicate to everybody we connect with that grace is here. That mercy is here, that life is here, that freedom is here, that deliverance is here, that your world can be changed because you've encountered a living Christ who lives in me. We have to figure out how to do that in a way that isn't judgy and haughty and self-righteous. Not easy. It's going to take a lot of work, but we're going to get there because that's our path forward. Number four, we play the long game over the short game. Now, some of you may not know this, but the amazing Simon Phillips, who helped lead worship this morning, is actually, well, was an elite cricket player in his day. This is true, right? You played some high level. He actually played for Team Canada in a number of events. So Simon's got some cricket experience. Now, what you may not know about cricket is that cricket is a very long game. Like, you know, some people think that an NFL game is like 3 hours long. It's like, oh, it's so long. Or a hockey game is 3 hours. Baseball, 3 hours. Oh, it's so long. I'm going to tell you how long a cricket game goes. The game that Simon was playing when he met Kathy ended 2 days ago. How's that? They have this whole language thing that they do. They have this whole language thing that they do. Hey, cricket goes forever. It goes for days. I mean, it doesn't go for years, but it goes for days. And they stop to have tea. True, right? In the international, they go and they play over in India. People watch this for a day. I have this TV service that I use. There's a full-on cricket channel. You can watch cricket 24/7, often the same game. It just goes on and on and on. We have to understand, nobody wants to play cricket here, I mean, other than Simon. Maybe we could have a cricket instructional thing. But here's the thing. This is where I want to go with this as I try to pull this back from cricket, is that we're here to play a long game. Now, it's true. There will be people who we're going to encounter both in the neighborhood and through your world and through my world, who are going to respond quickly and easily to the gospel. They're going to come the first time you invite them. And there's other people. It's going to take some work. It's going to take some work. It's going to take some persistence. It's going to be, you sure you don't want to come this week? You sure you don't want to come this week? There's quick wins. And then there's the wins that come because we showed up for the long game. Small wins are better than quick wins. Small wins, they come to a community event, like what we're going to do in November when Cheryl does a Christmas bazaar for the community and puts something on and invites people to buy tables and sell their wares at Christmas time. So those are small wins. They come in, they participate with us, and they do something like that. We're going to do Christmas service. People come in. We do Easter. People come in. And after a while, they figure out that we're not weird and that it's safe, right? And so they begin to take steps. They begin to walk with us, begin to move forward with us. Maybe after Christmas, we're able to do an alpha. And so we invite people who've been coming to an alpha course where they can explore what it means to be a Christian in a very safe and non-threatening environment. We're going to play the long game. The long game means this: we focus on what God has shown us. So for months, we went through this process of discovering what it was, what it is God is showing us, what is in the heart of God for City Light. What does that look like? We're committing to that. We're moving forward with it. We're focusing on that. And as we focus on that and move forward, we're going to be faithful to the opportunities that he sets before us. Now, it doesn't mean that everything we do is going to work out the way we think it's going to work out. Some things that we're going to do are going to turn out very differently than the way we started. But what matters is we started and we stepped out in obedience and faith, trusting that God was going to help us and give us favor. Someone say amen. I heard somebody say this morning, good golly, Miss Molly, help this brother preach today. We're not going to do that. Well, maybe I will just once because it sounds like it could be fun. Right? We're going to be faithful to the opportunities and we're going to practice the power of patience. Now, I'm not really a great gardener, although I will say that for the first year that we've lived in our house, we had green grass all year long. It wasn't easy, cost me hundreds of dollars in water, but I had green grass, and that matters to me. That matters to me. But the grass doesn't turn green because I yell at it and tell it to hurry. It turns green on its own sweet time and with a little bit of fertilizer, or a lot of fertilizer in my case. We practice the power of patience. There's value in waiting and being persistent. But it doesn't mean, patience in this case, doesn't mean I throw my seed in the ground and I walk away and I never come back to look after it or tend it. It means that I've got to come by and pull some weeds, right, Jane? It means I gotta prune some things and shape some things so that they look out, they come out the way that they're supposed to. We nurture it, we love it, and we take care of it. Some sow, some water, some reap. all because of patience. Finally, we build credibility and trust. If you hurry, if we hurry, if we push this beyond the pace that the Lord has for us, we lose everything that we've invested. We have to keep pushing. We have to keep moving. We have to keep pressing. We have to keep following. But we're going to build credibility and trust so that we're not chasing people away as we're trying to draw them to Christ. We're going to create a spiritual environment where people come to faith, where legacies, like we talked about this morning, begin and are built and lived out. Because Gorge Tillicum and the nations needs what City Light brings to the table.